Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Update comes from One Bills Driver. About 2 hours away from an important NFL deadline, the 4 p.m. deadline for franchised players to sign long-term extensions this year. 49ers took care of their franchise player earlier, signing kicker Robbie Gould, agreeing on a two-year, $10.5 million fully guaranteed deal. Gold's agent's been in the works for a couple of weeks now. The 49ers have an option where they can pick up the remaining 2 years on his contract, but they've assured themselves of having their 36-year-old franchise kicker under contract for at least the next two seasons. Might be the only deal done before the 4 p.m. franchise tag deadline, according to sources. Two other players facing the deadline are Texans linebacker Jadeveon Clowney and Falcons defensive tackle Grady Jarrett. Clowney, according to sources, will not get a deal done before the deadline. Grady Jarrett and the Falcons are discussing a deal. There is some hope they can beat the deadline, which is now just a couple hours away. Miami Dolphins assistant head coach, quarterbacks coach Jim Caldwell is taking a leave of absence for the entire 29 season to address an undisclosed health issue. Caldwell was hired in February, an experienced, accomplished offensive mind to assist brand new head coach Brian Flores at Miami. He's a two-time NFL head coach and was hired just after Flores got the job in Miami. Caldwell, 64 years old, expected to be away from the team to focus on his health throughout the season, but the Dolphins say he will serve as a consultant for the team and a veteran voice for Coach Brian Flores. Baseball, the Bisons home to start a seven-game homestand. They wrapped up their road trip with a 4-3 win at Pawtucket yesterday. The Herd now home to play seven straight at the downtown ballpark. They start 7:05 tonight against the Charlotte Knights. Game one of a four-game series. Sean Marimondo will be on the mound for the Herd tonight. And former boxing champion Pernell Whitaker, one of the great boxers in history, was killed last night when he was hit by a car in Virginia Beach, Virginia. He was 55 years old. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. A lot of discussion today about the NFL schedule, the 18-game schedule. We've got a bona fide NFL expert on the line with us right now. Doug Farrar is an NFL writer for USA Today Sports, the author of the book The Genius of Desperation. Spent a long time as a writer at SportsIllustrated.com. Doug, John Murphy, and Steve Tasker up here in Buffalo. Thank you for joining us.
How are you guys today?
We're great. We got a lot to talk to you about. I want to start, though, with a topic that Steve and I have kind of talked about for a couple of hours, and that's the league proposal, at least they're talking about it anyway. 18-game schedule. Players can only play limited to 16 games. Two-part question, Doug. What do you think of that plan, and how viable is that? Is that going to happen?
Well, if you're going to move to 18, even if you have 16, you've got – because, I mean, you guys know this. In preseason, the starters play for like a half in the third game, and other than that, they're barely out there. Even if you give every player two byes, you're going to have to hire more people to at the league level to monitor roster management so teams don't try and get funky with the monkey as far as, hey, let's get Tom Brady out there for games 17 and 18, things like that. Because the Patriots would, you know, never do something like that. A lot of teams are clean and above board. And was Todd Gurley hurt last year? So you kind of wonder how teams would manage that and how the league would manage that. I would think you'd have to expand rosters. The NFLP would have roster and salary cap concerns. The NFL just brought in, they just released their income statement, I believe, either yesterday or today. League is making money hand over fist. You have the CBA coming up. I would assume the NFLPA would demand a larger slice of the pie than I believe it, right now it's 47.5 for the players for the allotted cap. I would think that would have to go up, especially with a new TV contract. There's a lot of stuff there. I don't know with everything else both the league and the Players Association has to deal with. I know the NFL, the owners really want this for obvious financial reasons. You know, dunk it down to two preseason games and have 18 regular season games. That makes sense from an owner's perspective. I just think there are so many complications no matter how you try and slice that pie, I'm just not sure it can happen by the new CBA. Now, I would imagine the owners will make it a major weight of contention, and if there's a lockout, as there was during the last negotiations, I think that could be a primary issue. You know, I don't have, ostensibly, I don't have a problem with 18 games and 16 games in a season for players. I just, I think as a rule, Roger Goodell tends to be kind of a ready, fire, aim commissioner, and this has a ready, fire, aim feel to it.
One of the things, do you think that the players, after giving back last CBA, the owners kind of rubbed their faces in the fact they gave back 4% of the gross revenue split that they got from the league over some of the other issues. Do you think the players could say, okay, you can have the 18 games if you give us back that 4% that we gave you the last time around, and they would move on from there?
I think they would need more in return than just the 4%. And it may not like a larger percentage, but, you know, looking at the medicinal marijuana issue, there are a lot of things to look at. The way insurance is done, the way pensions are done. And I'll tell you this, the players and the players' association felt like they entered into good faith with the owners to have the 2011 season happen. And as you said, the owners kind of put it in their faces after the fact. It's one of the reasons the new negotiations are, and I've talked to people pretty high up, the new negotiations are going to be far more contentious than the last ones. I would be categorically surprised if there isn't a lockout of some length, and I think it'll take more. Whatever the owners want, I believe they're going to have to give back more than they would have a decade ago.
Do you think it'll be a lockout, not a strike?
Oh, it'll be a lockout.
Okay.
But I don't think the players will strike.
And, Doug, the commissioner said he would love to get a new CBA before this season begins. It sounds like you think that is, what, highly unlikely, impossible, maybe?
Well, I'd like a 1968 Shelby Mustang. Doesn't mean it's going to happen.
I got you. I know it. I always say to people, I want a pony. Yeah, same idea.
Exactly.
Hey, yeah. Hey, Doug, last time we had you on the show, a couple of months ago, we talked a little bit about your book, The Genius of Desperation. I'm a man of my word. I told you I would get it. I'm reading it. I started it on vacation a couple of weeks ago. I love the book, The Genius of Desperation. So let me start with that. Congratulations. It's a really interesting book, The Schematic Innovations That Made the Modern NFL.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
I want to ask
you to the 1960s Bills defense.
Exactly, yeah. And
right.
That's what I want to ask you about. And that was fairly early in the book. And you started out talking about, first of all, the 1960s San Diego Chargers offense. Sid Gilman. Look, we all know, and we pay homage to Sid Gilman as an offensive mastermind, a genius. He really was, and you make that pretty plain. Start with that, if you would, please. How desperation forced Sid Gilman to kind of come up with that offense that still has an impact in the NFL.
Well, I mean, Gilman was a successful college coach for a long time. He coached the Rams in the late 1950s, got fired from that, and he was one of the primary coaches when the American Football League started. I believe he and Hank Stram were the only coaches to have their teams all the way through that decade. And what Sid had done by the time he got into the AFL, most of the defenses in the beginning of the NFL were not great because they were, you know, trying to throw schemes against the wall and they were getting a bunch of NFL cast-offs. So that helped Sid's case. But what he did, he was fond of saying that the field is 100 yards long and 53 and a third yards wide, and we're going to make use of every inch of it, and that's what he did. He expanded the vertical passing concepts to include far more route concepts. And what he did for running backs, Keith Lincoln and Paul Lowe were the primary backs the Chargers had in the early 60s, and they'd flare out in that old pro set, you know, one back to either side of the quarterback about 3 or 4 yards behind, and they would run routes off of that, and it was far more than simple screen or swing passes. I mean, I don't have the book in front of me, but I believe I've seen Sid's Eagles playbook from when the Eagles went to the Super Bowl in 1980, and at that point he had about 25 different singular and combo route concepts just for his running backs. Wow. I mean, and Al Davis and Bill Walsh will both tell you that most of what they did in their careers, they learned from Sid Gilman. He's one of the top five offensive minds in pro football history, without question.
And that takes us to the Bills, who in 64 and 65 went up against Gilman and the Chargers. And most Bills fans know Lou Samian was the head coach, but the genius there, in your book anyway, was the defensive coordinator, later head coach, Joel Collier. Talk about him and what he did to shut down Sid Gilman in that Chargers offense.
Well, it's like we talk about the Hall of Fame every year and the contributor category and getting guys in the Hall of Fame who don't get the credit they deserve. Joe Collier is one of the more underrated coaches, regardless of offense, defense, assistant, whatever. And, you know, he followed Saban in Buffalo, and that didn't work out. But as a defensive coach, I mean, he was running iterations of the 3-4 a decade before Chuck Fairbanks and Bum Phillips really brought it as a base in 1974. And if, you know, there's enough stuff out there on YouTube of the 63 to 66 Buffalo Bills defense and what they did, they were running 3-4, they were running multiple fronts, they blitzed a lot. I mean, a decade before Joe Green had the stunt 4-3 where he was at an angle right over the center, the Bills were doing that with linebackers. Mm. Great secondary. It's a tremendously flexible and multiple defense in an era where pretty much everyone was playing the 4-3. There wasn't a lot of nickel, and you just kind of lined up and went at it. And certainly when the Bills beat the Chargers in 64, Collier was using zone blitzes. He was, you know, because in the early 60s, regardless of the league, there was a little bit of zone defense, but that didn't really happen until the early 70s. Don Shula brought that about, as did Don McCafferty. But they were, you know, running little zone structures that really got in the way of what Sid wanted to do. And then Joe Collier goes to Denver and builds the Orange Crush defense in the 1970s. That's a guy who, A, does not get talked about, and B, deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and it's difficult for guys like Joe Collier who weren't successful as a head coach to get mentioned. Dick LeBeau has been enshrined in Canton as an assistant coach, kind of a contributor slash coordinator, defensive mind. Plus, he did have a great career as a player as well. But Joe Collier was coaching in the National Football League, even in my career. Great coaches kind of hang around for a long time. And so, but your book that you're talking about, The Genius of Desperation, what was some of the, are there other instances in your book about desperation? I remember telling Murph in the last break, Joe Gibbs, the desperation that Lawrence Taylor and the Giants put into the Washington Redskins when Lawrence Taylor emerged onto the scene, that kind of evolved into the desperation their offense, just trying to get the ball off on a passing play, evolved into a whole offense.
In the, because I go by decade in the book, and the first decade is the beginning, you know, 1920 through 1949, and then 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and on and on. And I go into two specific adjustments that teams made to Lawrence Taylor. And in Joe Gibbs' case, I mean, there was a counter tray, which he was using anyway, but the proliferation of the H-back, the tight end, butted up, you know, right in formation, that was a direct response to Lawrence Taylor just beating the daylights out of every right and left hack we saw.
Right.
Gibbs said, I have to put another guy here or my quarterback is going to die. And so that was one. And then I go into what Bill Walsh did in the early 80s with the 49ers because his, you know, his tackles couldn't beat Lawrence Taylor either. So he came up with what's called a molly block, which was kind of a little bucket step to where you know Lawrence Taylor is coming so fast, you cannot beat him from the line. What you do is it's kind of a zone back pedal for a left tackle where you immediately, like right at the snap, you are not like reacting to Lawrence Taylor specifically coming around the arc because you can't do that. You're just like, boom, you're one or two steps back, and you're just waiting to sort of catch him. And so Lawrence Taylor forced two of the best coaches in NFL history to devise different kinds of things just to stop him, which is fairly impressive.
It's a really good book. I'm enjoying it immensely, Doug. Doug Farrar, our guest, the book is The Genius of Desperation, about how desperate coaches sometimes make genius moves. You do cover the current NFL in your role as a NFL writer for USA Today, and you've got a recent list that you've ranked the top NFL quarterbacks. Who do you got at number one there, Doug?
Number one, I have Patrick Mahomes. When you throw 50 touchdown passes at age 23 and you started one game before that in your NFL career, you make number one on my list. And it's, you know, the lists are, it's what you've done to a degree, but it's really about what you did in 2018 and sort of where you're going. And there are some Bills on the list.
What do you got for Bills? You have the center, right?
Mitch Morse, I have number four on my list of centers.
Who's ahead of him? Do you know offhand? Can I ask offhand? Do you know who's ahead?
Oh, let me see. I'm going to go look at that right now.
I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me.
Oh, all good. Ryan Kelly of the Colts, I have at number three. Rodney Hudson of the Raiders, I have at number two. And Jason Kelsey of the Eagles, I have at number one.
Okay.
Tre'Davious White, by the way, is my number three outside cornerback.
What do you you also start to diversify in wide receivers. It has been through the millennia. It's always been wide receivers and running backs. And now you've got – it's kind of been diverged. Now you've got outside receivers and slot receivers. Now, is it strictly – an alignment thing where these guys are, or is it just predominantly where their production comes from? How do you discern?
That's a good question. I did the same thing with cornerbacks, outside cornerbacks and slot corners.
Right.
This probably won't make you guys too happy, but Stephon Gilmore actually is in both. He played about 20% of his snaps. Yeah, he's a really good player. Number one on my outside list, and I believe he was ninth in slot. He didn't play a lot of slot for the Patriots, but when he did, he was he was even better in the slot than outside. It's role to a degree, it's production to a degree, and I would look at Pro Football Focus stats because they have, you know, slot receiver and slot cornerback production metrics, and I would say, okay, let's go to the tape and pull up the All-22 on Game Pass and see what these guys are really doing, because you guys know the stats don't tell the whole story. You have to watch the tape too. And a lot of it came about through, you know, just but the stats make you aware, and then you watch the tape to see what the guy's really doing.
Right.
On your list of slot wide receivers, Cole Beasley does not show up on that list. The Bills spent considerable money to bring him in here and plug him in as their slot wide out. How's Cole Beasley missing from that list, and what kind of an impact do you think he might have for Buffalo?
Well, I mean, you can say, is he one of the 11 best players at his position? You know, I think his role with the Cowboys was pretty limited. Cowboys' passing offense was also really limited, too. It's why they got a new offensive coordinator. I think he is, specifically for the Bills, when you have a young quarterback who's still kind of learning what he's doing, any kind of security blanket you can give him is extremely valuable, and that's what Beasley kind of does. You know, he's going to be there for the 5-yard slant, 7-yard quick out, whatever. You know he's going to be there on those the simple quick route concepts that chew up yardage. So I think in Buffalo's case specifically, Beasley is more valuable than he might be somewhere else with a veteran quarterback who might want a more expansive slot game. You know, would the Patriots want him? I don't know. Would the Packers want him? Not sure. But I think he fits what Buffalo wants to do as Josh Allen kind of gets his feet under him.
I wanted to ask you this, Doug. You have your ranking of running backs, top NFL running backs. Is there a spot in the NFL? Melvin Gordon has made headlines lately where he's not going to sign and come into training camp, or he's going to hold out unless he gets a new deal. We've seen the drama with Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh. You've got Ezekiel Elliott, who is coming back for a contract negotiation with the Cowboys coming up very soon. And then you see what happened with Todd Gurley. He signed an enormous deal, and now his career looks to be limited in how long he's going to last in the NFL. Is there a spot in the NFL for a running back to be that highly paid because their job is, A, easily replaceable, and, B, really dangerous, and you may not have him for the length of the contract?
I think running backs are more fungible than most positions, but I think the fungibility of a back still depends on specific skill set. There's a reason the Jets paid Le'Veon Bell as much as they did, even though I know the coaching staff and the GM were, you know, at odds about this. Le'Veon Bell would make it in the NFL purely as a slot receiver. Huh. He's that good when he's running routes. He's that good as an overall receiver. then you factor in his productivity as a running back, and he's not, you know, he's not Devontae Freeman. He's not Melvin Gordon. He brings a lot more to the table than the typical running back. There are some guys who are outliers. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott maybe had his best season last year when the Cowboys' offensive line was ravaged with injuries. I mean, Zach Martin was hurt. Tyron Smith was hurt. Travis Frederick was out for the whole year. And he single-handedly kept that run game going. So I know there are a lot of narratives and specific metrics that go into the running, you know, position X is fungible. I don't think you can do position X because the players are so different. What they bring to the table is so different. I mean, and Gurley is a transcendent back. His problem is just that he keeps going back to his college days. He's got an injury history that's very worrisome. And no one's going to do with a guy like that. And Melvin Gordon's had his own injury concerns. You know, the Eagles gave Carson Wentz $107 million in guaranteed money, despite the fact that he's had season-ending injuries the last 2 years. Well, it's because he's a quarterback. If you're a running back, forget it. I mean, you're going to play for the league minimum with a history like that. So I think it is positional, but you have to look at these players as what do they bring to the table as opposed to the running back position is automatically, you know, blinking out.
Our guest is Doug Farrar, NFL writer for USA Today Sports. Just a minute or two left, Doug. I want to ask you about something you've written lately about the Packers and Aaron Rodgers and the sense you have that Rodgers is going to have to change his approach a little bit, right, with a new head coach. He might not have the freedom he had under Coach McCarthy.
Yeah, and it's an interesting – when I put out my quarterback rankings today, I had someone ask me if the Rams could trade Jared Goff or Baker Mayfield, would they do it? And my first thought was, if I was the Rams, I would do that so quickly Everyone's head would spin. But then you think about, well, Jared Goff is a system quarterback, and Sean McVay has a very particular system. And Freddie Kitchens kind of let Mayfield let it rip and improvise more. Rodgers is used to a really, really simplistic system. I mean, most of what I've seen from the Packers could come right out of the 1973 Miami Dolphins playbook. It's not sophisticated at all. Within that, Rodgers, who I think may be the most physically gifted quarterback ever as far as the entire skill set, he would improvise a lot. He would go off script. Matt LaFleur comes in. He's got very specific RPO concepts, route concepts. This is what you do with play action. You know, Rodgers is going to have to work in a scheme. And it's one thing, you know, if you're like Peyton Manning and you're going from Tom Moore to Gary Kubiak, you're kind of used to adhering to a system. Even if you're Tom Brady and you've had Josh McDaniels twice and this guy and that guy and Charlie Weiss and whoever, you're used to that systemic structure. Rodgers really isn't. He hasn't had that for a long time. So I think it's going to take a while to sort of just bring him under rein to a certain degree. And given the talent of the guy he has at that position, LaFleur is going to have to bend a little bit too. He's going to have to understand that Rodgers plays brilliantly outside of structure. And, you know, it's the same. You know, Pete Carroll is a very structure-minded coach, especially on offense. He's got a guy who improvises brilliantly, and it's being a jazz band. I mean, you can have John Coltrane in your band, and all he's going to do is play the hits, and you want him to improvise a little bit. So both of those guys are going to have to figure that out.
That can be kind of fun to watch.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Doug, thanks for this. Again, I'm really enjoying the book. We'll give it one more plug, The Genius of Desperation. I'm right in the middle of it. Thanks for joining us today to talk about that and to talk about what's going on in today's NFL. We appreciate it.
Well, I hope you guys enjoy the K-Gun stuff, too.
Yeah. Thanks, all right, Doug. I'll get to that. Thanks. Doug Farrar is NFL writer for USA Today Sports, the author of The Genius of Desperation, a book that I'm reading right now. You know how cool it is to be able to talk to the author about the book that you have?
It's true. It's interesting, too, because I've seen that in action.
Yeah, where that desperation stuff.
Like I remember Teddy Marchibroda standing in front of a who's in my mind a Hall of Fame caliber guy who as a head coach, assistant coach, offensive mind. Teddy was an awesome coach and a wonderful guy, and I loved him to death. To see him stand up in front of a group of guys, a room full of Hall of Famers, and saying, "Here, guys, here's what we're going to do. They're doing this. We've got to do this because if we, you know, they've got some stuff here we got to deal with, right? It was fun to watch because it's so creative. There's so many, you know, it's not like art because there's no limits. You know, you can kind of pull in whatever. But this had, you had 11 guys against their 11 guys, and you had certain rules where we had to align, and you had to go. And it was fun to listen and have him rationalize and say, here's the logic behind what we're doing. And, man, when you got that and you started practicing it and you installed it and to see it work, I understood then why guys got into coaching and why some guys are really good at it. Teddy Marchabrota was so fun. Nick Nicolau, another guy that was – they were just so fun to be a part of and watch him work. And that book by Doug Farrar, you know, kind of lets you in those meeting rooms and you can get – literally the desperation. They go, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
We got to win.
When you say you understand why guys get into coaching, what do you mean? Because of the artistry involved, the creativity?
You see guys that you love and respect who are working hard, doing a plan that you came up with and doing it all together and to come out and have it work. There's something uniquely rewarding about that.
I bet. Yeah. Pretty cool. It's a good book. Thanks to Doug Farrar. When we come back, we expect to be in studio with a guy who is from a different sport. He's in his third season in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series. Daniel Suarez scheduled to join us to talk about racing in Watkins Glen coming up in a couple of weeks. Come on back for that. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy back with Steve Tasker. How do you like having me back, Steve?
It's been great.
Good answer.
You particularly the right answer. Since we got right into our heated discussion that we've been having off the air and on the air for like whatever, however
months.
Long it, yeah,
I'm
for
too,
months.
I'm too laid back, relaxed to really argue with this. My opinion has not changed.
And I think
it's bizarre to have an 18-game regular season schedule and limit players to 16. I think it's a disservice to the fans. I think it's not
it's a disservice to the game, you could say.
Yes, it's a disservice to the game. But I'm just not in the mood to argue with you about it today.
The fun's out of it now that it's been legitimized. It's not my idea, right?
It's
mainstream. It's not such a – I don't feel so,
right.
You know,
because I spent
empowered.
Time the last couple of months telling you, you're crazy.
Because it was my
– And now that the commissioner's talking
no
about it.
It's fun being normal.
You can't just say you're crazy anymore.
That's right.
All right. So we'll take more calls on that. And our Twitter poll is going pretty well with more than 1,800 votes. What should an NFL regular season schedule look like? Should you keep it at 16 games just as it is? 51% of you say yes, that's the way it should go. Should it be 18 games and the players play in all? 29% say that's the way to do it. Should it be what the commissioner talked about the other day, 18 games and the players play just 16? Only 15% buy into the Tasker plan. Only 15%, 5% have something else in mind. Give us a call and we'll discuss 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550.
Yeah. Let's drop that for a minute.
We're going to drop that because we have a special guest in studio with us. He is a driver in his third season on the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series. He drives the number 41 Stewart Haas Racing Ford Fusion. Daniel Suarez in studio with us, looking over things at One Bills Drive a couple of weeks before the Go Bowling at the Glen race weekend. Daniel, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, guys. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing good. Great. Yeah, I drove the pace car last year at the event.
Yeah, I know that.
Oh, did you know that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. So I was shocked at not only the venue, but also about, you know, the atmosphere and all that. It's kind of awesome to be there. But tell me, compare Watkins Glen and the venue with other venues that you were in. I mean, you were in Kentucky just this weekend.
Yeah, you know, something I really love about Watkins Glen is that the fans are so passionate.
Oh, yeah.
And they go there to camp the entire week and weekend.
Right.
Actually, I was just talking with my friend from the racetrack, and they're heading into the fifth year straight sold out. Yeah. And all this is thanks to the fans, you know, and just very happy to come back. Actually, Watkins Glen is a very good racetrack for me. Mm-hmm. We have had very strong results in the last couple of years, and we're looking forward to another good one.
Mm-hmm. August 4th is the day for the race at Watkins Glen. Go bowling at the Glen. It's a big weekend of racing there. It's a road course. One of what, two or three road courses?
Exactly. One of three.
One of three?
One of three. And for me, it's a lot of fun racing road course. You know, every time people ask me, hey, which one is your favorite racetrack? And obviously, the first question back is, okay, ovals or road course? Because they are a completely different deal. And road course is for me a lot of fun. That's what I grew up doing.
Really?
I grew up doing go-karts in Mexico, US, and even a little bit in Europe. And for me, that's kind of like my basics, you know?
How did you, yeah, how do you stay sharp? Because oval, you just turn left all the time. How do you stay sharp at being road course ready? And how difficult is it to go from oval to road course? I expect road courses are much more difficult.
It's different. You know, it's very different because road course, you know, you make a mistake and you go out of the racetrack. In an oval, you make a mistake and you hit the wall.
Oh, yeah.
So the line of mistake in oval is very, very fine because you make a mistake and you have to bring the backup the backup car, which is never good. But, you know, it's just a completely different game. I would say that maybe 10 years ago, the NASCAR drivers, they were not great at road course racing, and they were bringing some other road course drivers from different places, and they were kicking everyone's, in racing. So mm-hmm. Now today, everyone is so good that you can bring whoever you want, and because these guys, they know these racetracks and these cars so well, it's very hard to be competitive. So honestly, I have enjoyed this so much, and it's been a lot of fun to be part of this.
So you were in Kentucky this last week, and you were the pole sitter, and you led for 49 laps, and then you had a pit stop that took a little too long, and you dropped back after a yellow pit stop. Is that right? And then somebody blew a tire and you had to go in for a pit, and then you had to take a green light pit stop late in the race.
Yeah, we had a couple of things that didn't go our way. We had a very fast race car. We showed that in qualifying, and we led a bunch of laps there. But unfortunately, we made a couple mistakes there, you know, with the SRTE and as well. After that didn't really put us too far behind. But after that, we had a flat tire on the green, and I had to pit on the green, and the plan wasn't to pit there. The SRTE was telling me to pit later, and kind of like they changed the game a lot, and then we were already behind, and it's so difficult to come back. We at one point we were two laps down, and I was able to come back one, and then eventually the next one, and we ended up finishing in the top 10, which it was good based on the data we're having, but you know, we were fortunate that we had a very fast car.
Difficult is it to anticipate? Well, anticipate the unexpected is impossible, but you do have your pits scheduled. But then if somebody else blows a tire, you can take a pit when you didn't really schedule one. And it's, how do you stay flexible enough to do that but still keep, you know, your mind on your schedule, that your perfection schedule?
Yeah, I mean, that's the difficult part, that sometimes you have to have your plan A, B, and C, because you never know which one is going to work out. And if for example, that time that I had a flat tire, I pit, and if the caution was coming out later, just after that, I was gonna be in big trouble because you know, I peed on the green and everyone else was gonna pee on their caution. So, you know, sometimes it's just you have to make your bet. You know, just like any other sport, you have to make your bet and hopefully that you make the right one and stick with it.
Daniel Suarez, our guest, getting ready to run at Watkins Glen in a couple of weeks at the Go Bowling at the Glen race weekend, finishing eighth. You did not pick up any points, right, in the playoff race this past weekend, or did you?
Well, we pick up the eighth place,
points,
but
you're not in the playoff.
We are right there in the bubble, actually. Yeah. We are 4 points behind the playoff call line, which is not horrible, but it's not great because the entire season we've been actually on the good side. Yeah. But you know,
how many events left?
We have 6 races left, so we still have time.
Do you get anything for leading 49 laps yesterday?
You know, that's a good question, because we don't get points for leading laps, but we do get points for stage points. And what is stage points is, like, in last race in Kentucky, in lap 80 and 160, you get points depending where you are in the racetrack. Mm. Unfortunately, the flat tire and the SRTE didn't help us to get any points in either one. That's why some drivers that they finished 15 in the race, they could have get more points than me that I finished 8, because they got some points in those stage points. So Kentucky was a good result for us, but it wasn't a good race.
Hey, Daniel, you mentioned how you have to drive differently in a road course. Your entire crew, right, from the number 41 car, they have to set up the car differently in a road course, right? That's got to be kind of a difficult challenge for them after being on the ovals all this time.
Actually, it's a completely different car.
Yeah.
The car is different because the race car that we have for the ovals, you know, the weight of the car is everything pulling to the left. So we can turn and we can go left as fast as possible. But when we go to a road course, the chassis is completely different because everything is center gravity, and we made the car go fast left and right. So it's a completely whole different game.
So the only thing the same is the paint job, the 41, right? That's the only thing the same.
The paint scheme and the driver.
Yeah, that's
and over the mechanics. But car wise, the engine is different, the tires are different, the brakes completely different setup, the transmission completely different. Like it's kind of like a completely different race car.
NASCAR driver Daniel Suarez in studio with us for a couple more minutes. Hey, out here at One Bills Drive today, what'd you think of the complex? We saw you touring around. You were out on the field a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah, right? It was a lot of fun. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but the very first, I've been living in the U.S. for 8 years now.
Grew up in Mexico?
I grew up in Mexico, but the very first time I moved to the U.S. was here.
In Buffalo.
Yeah, and the reason why, it was because the owner of the little team that I was racing with, he lived here. And I didn't know anything about racing. Troy Williams.
Okay.
He lived here, and he had a very, very little team. So I moved here in February. It was very cold.
Oh, you moved to Buffalo in February. Good for you.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A kid from Mexico. Keep that in mind. So
that is the best.
So it was very cool. A lot of snow. And it didn't last very long. I ended up just 3 months here. I went back to Mexico. I packed all my stuff. And then I drove to Charlotte, where I live right now. But yeah, it's always fun to come back here. It brings me a lot of memories 8 years ago. And it was a great experience. Actually, my friend Troy, he still lives here.
Are you an NFL fan? I know there's been NFL games played in Mexico City the last couple
of
years.
Yeah, I am. And honestly, I become a bigger fan since I moved to the U.S. Mm-hmm. because obviously everyone is a fan here, and you feel like out of the group if you're not.
Sure.
So I become more and more NFL fan when I move here.
So Bowling at the Glen coming up, you're going to be there. What are your expectations for that race? Do you think that far ahead?
Honestly, I try to think 1 week at a time. This weekend we're going to be racing in Loudon, next week in Pocono, and then we're coming to the Glen. But the Glen has been very good to me. Actually, last year we finished third. The previous year we finished fourth. Hopefully we can skip the second and go straight to first.
Hey, you brought your own bowling pin too. You got to go everywhere with that for a walk.
Yeah. This is our bowling. They Go Bowling is going to be sponsoring a race. They've been sponsoring a race for several years now. And the Glen is an amazing place. Like I said, the fans make it so good. They're camping everywhere. So the atmosphere is so good. So fun. And it's always good to come back.
I enjoyed it so much. I drove the pace car there last Sunday. It was last year for the same event. And it was such a great experience. And if you haven't been there, you got to put it at least on your bucket list, if not your regular yearly calendar. It's a fun event.
It's a fun race.
It's close to Buffalo.
Yeah,
it's a fun race, and as a race car driver, I'm telling you, I love coming to here to Watkins Glen. It's just a fun racetrack, road course, very very fast. Mm-hmm. We have some parts of that course that we are very very quick.
Sure.
but that's what we do, right? Yeah. And that makes it fun for me.
Good luck to you. Stay healthy, and thanks for coming in here. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
Daniel Suarez, Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series driver, visiting us at One Bills Drive today. He's going to be at the Go Bowling at the Glen race weekend. August 4th is a big race down there just a couple of weeks away, and we're happy to have Daniel here to talk about that. Steve and I coming back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Well, here we are already. What have we learned from today's show presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills? What have we learned? Doug Farrar was on the show with us earlier on this hour. He covers the NFL for USA Today. Doug Farrar talked about Cole Beasley. He does not have him ranked as one of his top 10 or 11 slot receivers in the NFL, but Farrar thinks he will have an impact on the Buffalo Bills offense.
Specifically for the Bills, when you have a young quarterback who's still kind of learning what he's doing, any kind of security blanket you can give him is extremely valuable, and that's what Beasley kind of does. You know, he's going to be there for the 5-yard slant, 7-yard quick out, whatever. You know he's going to be there. on those the simple, quick route concepts that chew up yardage. So I think in Buffalo's case specifically, Beasley is more valuable than he might be somewhere else with a veteran quarterback who might want a more expansive slot game. You know, would the Patriots want him? I don't know. Would the, you know, would the Packers want him? Not sure. But I think he fits what Buffalo wants to do as Josh Allen kind of gets his feet under him.
Doug Farrar talking about that. We had a really good topic of discussion today. And Steve, I'm proud of myself. I never raised my voice, never really got into it with you on this. But look, it's a stupid idea. It's an insult to fans. It degrades the game. I believe all that. I didn't quite verbalize that today because it's my first day back from vacation. I didn't want to get all worked up. Right. But I don't like this. What should an NFL regular season look like? And I'm happy to say that most of our respondents on Twitter, close to 2,000, agree with me. 51% say leave it as is.
Right.
29% say, okay, have an 18-game schedule, but the players have to be eligible to play in all of them. And only 15% adopt your plan, 18 games, players only play 16. 5% have something else in mind. And look, right. I'm not – it's just a bad idea, Steve. Nothing will change my mind.
The tenor of our discussion was it's evolved over these months. We've talked about this thing a dozen times. I think it comes down to the fact that it's awesome the way it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not broken in any way, shape, or form. I mean, I still think the owners have it out there that there's more to get. And you know how –
there's another nickel on the table. Let's go get it.
Exactly. I think it does verge on a huge compromise to the quality of the product. And it's a product that has got them to the top of the sports pyramid. And I think when they start to feel like – start to do something like this where they compromise the quality of what's on the field in any way, shape, or form, and I get it that it's – you know, and the proponents of this, like me being one of them, saying, listen, I get it that it's going to be part of the rules. It's going to be an extra degree of difficulty. It's going to make one of the things about this sports league unique in that it's so physically demanding. You've got to make a concession to the player's safety and give them a week or two off, whatever, however you want to spin it. It's an enormous compromise to the competitive level of being pro sports. And for me, growing up and being an adult and playing the game, pro sports means something different. It means you're all in. This is for money. It's for meaning. It's to win, and it's to win a championship. It's big dudes competing for keeps now and today and forget about tomorrow. That's what it means. And I think when you do, that's the big compromise that it would be if you start saying, well, we got this guy who's really good, but you know what? It's his turn to sit down.
Not good.
I think that's a big step.
We got to go. We're back tomorrow at noon. We'll see you then. One Bills Live on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.